This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina artist McDonald Mackie Bain says her first art class in college was a disaster. She promptly changed her major to science. But Mackie Bain was drawn back into art, and that came back into her mind in the 1950s when modern artist Gregory Ivey gave a class at what was then the Women's College of the University of North Carolina. That school is now UNC Greensboro. Mackie Bain is now one of the foremost modern artists in North Carolina. She's the subject of an upcoming exhibit called Two Parts Art, One Part Science. It includes nearly 50 years of Bain's work using geometric spacing to create three-dimensional and textured effects on the canvas. The exhibit opens this Saturday at the Weatherspoon Art Museum in Greensboro. But first, Mackie Bain is here to talk about her work and her life. Mackie Bain, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you.
Some of her work, by the way, is displayed here at the Triad Stage, and you can also go to our website, stateofthings.org. Also with us is Lee Hansley. He is the owner of Lee Hansley Gallery in Raleigh and a longtime friend of Mackie Bain. Lee, welcome. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Mackie Bain, you heard that conversation we had about constructed reality, and of course that really is what the modernist movement was all about, right? Exploring that very thing.
Yes, indeed.
Interestingly enough, you came to it, though, in a way, looking at the very representational art of your grandmother.
Yes, I grew up seeing real art hanging on the walls, and I never did very much. I had little in high school, very little. I think the home ec teacher had me painting instead of baking cakes. And then I went to college, and I signed up for an art class. I was going to be an art major. It just didn't work out. Part my fault, maybe mostly my fault, to be perfectly honest about it. Anyway, I gave that up and moved into science and got a degree in science, which I loved anyway. So that was no sacrifice. And then several years later, I kept thinking art, and decided it was time to do something about it, and so I ended up at Women's College Art Department.
Well, describe those pictures, because I understand that they were landscapes that your grandmother did.
Yes, she did. Well, actually, she did portraits and animal and drawings of. She worked in charcoal, and they were, I would say, regular drawing paper size, and they were all very elaborately framed. That was the fashion at the time. And she was really quite skilled.
Highly
representational.
It looked like the thing she was.
Yes, yeah, yes. Right. And the portraits were very good portraits. The animals looked like animals, and so she did a good job.
How much of that first art class was the failure of your failure in that first art class, do you think, had to do with your trying to make that kind of art?
I don't think it has so much that. It's just that I had such a lack of knowledge. Hmm. And I was sitting in a class with these people who had nice art classes in high school. They knew what she was talking about. I didn't.
So talk about this urge then to go back. You've got a degree in science. Mm-hmm. What's pulling you? What is it about art that's pulling you back?
I don't know. I thought about it, and I thought, I was living in Greensboro, and my husband traveled a good deal, and so I didn't have a lot to do. And I thought, well, maybe I'll go to the university and take an art class.
Then you met Gregory Ivey, right?
Yes.
Talk about that.
On my way over there, I called and had he was very kind to give me an appointment. And on the way over there, I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to do this, why don't you just go all the way? So I signed up for a full load of classes, even though these were all undergraduate classes at that point. And I really liked what happened that year, and the next year I applied to graduate school and then proceeded to get my master's there. Yep.
Lee Hansley, tell us a little bit about Gregory Ivey. Who is he?
Well, we always say that he was the first modern artist to live in North Carolina. He moved here from St. Louis, and he was a member of an avant-garde group in St. Louis called the Hi-Hats. Do you remember that, Mackie?
Yes.
We found, when Mrs. Ivey died, we had to build a resume for Mr. Ivey because he had no resume. He never had a resume. And so in going through her trunk, we found these newspaper clippings and built a resume from that. And we found this article, several articles about the hi-hats in St. Louis, and they would go around St. Louis and do these really strange things and do them anonymously. Mm. And he was a member of that group.
Like the Banksy of his age, right?
That's right. Yeah. And he came, he was hired at UNCG Women's College in 1935 to start the art department. And Mackie probably knows more about the evolution of that than I do, but I know that he pulled together people from home ec. Mm-hmm. And who else, Mackie?
There had been an art teacher there, who, but not as a department, but there had been someone on.
Was that Helen Thrush?
No, it was before Helen Thrush.
What was it like to study under Gregory Ivey, though, Maggie?
It was sometimes a little mysterious, but he was a very sensitive teacher, and you always enjoyed his classes, and he was able to very subtly plant ideas for you to explore.
Had you been thinking about or thinking of yourself as a modernist artist, or what the modernist movement
that
just meant?
That was not a concept I ever thought about.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the concept and the way you approach art, because you really look at it from the elements and building those elements, right?
Yes. I'm actually working with a certain alphabet of art, line, shape, color, and so forth. I spent a lot of time studying Joseph Albers' work. Mm-hmm. He did a public, well, his first publication was The Interaction of Color, and that was an idea that it really intrigued me, and I work with that a great deal. And I'll say this about it. I start off working, and I never know what it's going to look like when I get through. Every piece is a little adventure. And, of course, if I don't like it when I'm through, then it doesn't. Show daylight.
Do you know when you're through, or how do you know?
Oh,
when
yes.
Through?
I never have that problem. Now, I know that is a decision that a lot of artists have to work certain ways of working. But with my work, once I have essentially covered the canvas, that's it.
Lee, we talked about modernism being this, and we heard Eric's story and talked about constructing consciousness. And, of course, this was the project of the modernist beginning pretty much the end of the 19th century, right? The idea that now we can see consciousness is much more malleable, and so it's showing up in literature, graphic design, and art. Tell us a little bit about this movement and its impact.
I think, really, that most people who know something about art history would trace it to the Bauhaus in Weimar, Germany, which, eventually moved to Black Mountain. Joseph Albers moved it to Black Mountain. And there they believed in using anything and everything that was available to you to make art. They also believed in the integration of the arts. Dance concerts would have very interesting sculptural costumes, very interesting sets. Probably the dance brought all of the arts together more than anything in the Bauhaus days. But that's the root of it. And then the seed was planted there, and that seed grew exponentially in the United States. The United States, I think, responded more openly to modernism than any other continent or any other particular country.
When we talk about using everything available, Mackie, Gregory Ivey, I understand, inspired you to use glass in your masterwork. Talk about that.
Yes, and this all came about in a very casual sort of way. I was in class one day. This was a studio class, and he was walking around the room, and he stopped where I was working. He said, come into my office. I have something in there I want to show you. And I went with him, and he said he had a piece of glass work. It was basically stained glass. And I don't remember now. I know it was a woman in Virginia who did it. I don't remember her name. And I don't really remember a lot about the piece, but she had done this and brought it for Gregory Ivey to look at and comment on. Anyway, that planted the idea of glass. I started thinking about glass. So he would often do things like that, which would get you started on an idea.
And did you use a little of your science background then to treat the glass?
Yes, and, I did.
Well, how did that come
because
about?
I ended up using the kiln for the glass, and I didn't use stained glass in its traditional fashion. It was used as a reflective medium. And I used metal, and I collected all sorts of kinds of glass, all the way from, say, Blenco in West Virginia to broken taillights. They used to be made of glass. But my science, I can give you one example where the science really fit into my work. I did a series of prints called Entropy, based on the concept of entropy. And entropy, if you've not heard of that lately, it was related to the laws of thermodynamics in physics. And there's a very thorough definition of the word entropy, but the one that makes sense, it's easy to understand, and it really fits what I'm doing, is a lack of order or predictability, gradual decline into disorder. And how that worked out was I used a ruler and I used a compass, very controlled instruments, and put that onto the film I was using for the silk screen. And then I brought in what's called a flexible curve, which you could set up a different curve. And then it kept shifting as I went across. So things changed. There was no, you had no way of predicting. Anyway, that's a case where there was a direct relationship to science. Yeah.
And they're changing, but you also have a prescribed shape that you're following, but it's showing up in random ways on the page.
Right. So it's being made unpredictable.
Right. Yep. A piece of yours hangs in the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
Yes.
Tell us about the piece and how it got there.
Beg your pardon?
Tell us about that piece.
Well, this is a story of how it's not necessarily bad to be rejected. Because I was living in California, and I had just moved there from North Carolina, and I was still getting mailing from galleries and such in the state. And I had one from the Gallery of Contemporary Art in Winston-Salem, now SECA, and they were having a competition, so I packaged up two pieces of work and crate and sent them to the gallery. The juror for that show did not like my work, and so she rejected me. The gallery sent it back to me. Then came this prospectus from the North Carolina Museum of Art for their Artist Annual competition. And I thought, well, I've got those two already in a box. So I opened up the box and took the Winston-Salem labels off and put the Raleigh labels on and shipped it off to Raleigh. And the juror for that show was William Lieberman, who was the curator of prints and drawings for the Museum of Modern Art. He saw one of my works and liked it and bought it for the collection. That's the story of how it got
there.
That's
a pretty amazing story. Lee, really one of the few North Carolina artists whose work hangs in that museum.
Yes,
right?
Mackie's one of the few artists who has lived her life in North Carolina primarily and has worked in the collection. There are other North Carolinians who were born here who have work in the collection, like Donald Salton and Kenneth Nolan and Henry Pearson, but they're national names in the art world, and they're in most major museums. But Mackie's really one of the few practicing artists in North Carolina who has work in that collection. And in our world that we occupy, that is the temple of art, you know.
You mentioned the North Carolina Museum of Art, which has become a really important cultural institution in the nation and certainly in the Southeast, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And of course, galleries across this area. What's the impact? You know, modernism, we talked about it, and of course, it's one of those unfortunate terms because it really applies to a specific period, and we're always thinking we're modern. I mean, is modernism, that was a period that had a finite lifespan?
I think, wouldn't you say, Mackie, that it ended when paintings went all black and all white? And then, I mean, I have had art historians as teachers at University in Chapel Hill to say that was sort of marked the end of it with Ad Reinhardt and Agnes Martin and the Byers. What is Byers' first name? William Byers.
Well, when pop art and op art moved in.
Right.
But a lot of your work is optical, too. I mean, you work in what we might call optical illusion.
Yeah, right, it is. It's not that purpose, though. It's
what is the purpose? When you do those, where you create kind of three-dimensional effects using shadow and line, for you, is it the simply the aesthetic effect, or are you trying to tell us how malleable our consciousness
No, I don't have any very profound reason behind
you can make one up. That's what we're doing on this show. You just make it up.
That's what you wanted to do.
I make it for the joy of looking.
Wow.
And it's relationships between colors, relationships with lines, with shapes, and so forth. And
it's the formal aspects of art.
It's for pure pleasure of looking.
And I would like to point out one thing. Excuse me, Mackie. I'd like to point out one thing about her work. Mackie does not really like to talk about her work that much. But I would argue that she grew up in the mountains of southwestern Virginia, in the Bland County, Virginia, in a very beautiful bucolic landscape. And I would say that if the people who are in this room looked at that painting over there, they would see that that probably is a landscape. And it certainly, I do think that the flowing of the hills and the, in other words, Mackie's paintings are never really abrupt. They're very fluid. And I would hazard that that comes from observations of the landscape.
It's great work, and we're all happy. Thank you so much for sharing it here at the Triad Stage, also on our website, and of course at the Weatherspoon. And thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you, Mackie Bain.
Thank you.
North Carolina Modern Artist. The exhibit, Two Parts Art, One Part Science, opens Saturday at the Weatherspoon Art Museum in Greensboro. Lee Hensley is the owner of Lee Hensley Gallery in Raleigh and the gallerist for Mackie Bain. You can find their work at our website, stateofthings.org. It's a program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wadarski helping out today. Andrew Tai is our intern. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.